tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. to catch another Labor Radio show.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. You're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. Today we're talking with Wesley Todd. Wesley, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Hi, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. It's really great having you on. So Wesley, can you tell me a little bit about your story and what you'd like to share with our audience?
Yes, ma'am. I was actually incarcerated crossing the Mexico border. I went through a really serious financial problem in my life, and my younger sister was murdered. And I was a really bad alcoholic at the time, and I made a really stupid choice out of desperation to try to make some money illegally. And thank God I was actually busted at the San Diego border. I was taken to San Diego MCC, where I started the court process. I ended up being sentenced, and I turned my life over to God in the process, and it really made a humongous difference in my life. The judge actually didn't do too bad. He gave me 5 years in the federal BOP, and he actually let me turn myself in at Coleman Federal Correctional Low in Florida. So I drove up to Coleman Federal Correctional Low, and I turned myself in. And as a new Christian, I was really trying hard to actually obey the Bible and actually be under authority and actually have respect for my authority figures and the people that God placed in our government. So I really went there with that mindset to actually, you know, really behave and obey the rules and really just respect the authority there. And so I started out my sentence like that, and I was just constantly seeing corruption everywhere I turned, and I was just really, I guess, just really troubled in my spirit because I really wanted to actually believe in this country, believe in America, and I was also trying to do my job as a Christian and actually have respect for authority. And when I first got to Coleman, one of the first things I noticed was there was water pouring down from the ceilings, you know, running on people's beds. There was black mold throughout the whole facility, especially like in the ventilation systems. Whenever the air conditioning would actually kick off and kick back on, it would actually pepper someone's entire bed with black mold like the size of popcorn. And the guys were, you know, very concerned because there was guys having really difficulty breathing. I could hardly breathe, you know, throughout my entire stay there. And the guys would actually collect it in like pill bottles, and they would fill up a whole pill bottle with just the black mold that was on the top of their bed. And, you know, they were planning on trying to sneak it out, smuggle it out, send it to a lab, you know, and try to get the prison busted. But I was watching all this stuff in sort of disbelief and kind of horror. And there was a black man actually died on the institution. He was a really, really good Christian guy. he had really, really done a huge turnaround in his life. He was a mentor to all the other inmates. He was involved in a lot of life skills programs to try to be a mentor to other people. And President Obama had actually given him clemency, and he was just about to get out on the clemency. And he actually died. And they had his funeral, and one of the staff members from the reentry department actually came to the funeral, and he said, "Listen, guys," he said, "I'm really, really upset right now." He said, "I've known this inmate all these years here at this institution. This was one of the best Christian inmates in the world. This guy was just about to go home." And he said, "This guy died of respiratory failure from the black mold in the ventilation system." And he said, "The warden is trying to lie and trying to cover it up. And he's falsifying the guy's death certificate, trying to say the guy died of drug overdose." But he said, "I want to be the one staff member that vouches for this inmate that this inmate does not use drugs. And this inmate did not die of a drug overdose." So when this actually occurred, this really shocked me into reality. I also had a couple of guys actually prophesied over me and said that God was going to really use me in prison reform. And one guy actually said, "God put you here to see and hear everything going on before everything is changed. He put you here as a witness." So I took these words to heart, and I wrote a letter to the warden, and I said, "Look, I'm going to immediately take you to federal court for falsifying that death certificate, as well as manslaughter for killing that inmate." And I think it was the next day, I was actually out on the rec yard, and they called me over the loudspeaker to the SIS office, which SIS is equivalent of basically the FBI. And they called me to the office, and the SIS officer actually had that letter in his hand, and he proceeded to start threatening me. He threatened to kill me. He threatened to make me disappear. He threatened to bury me under the prison. Nobody would ever find out what happened to me. And then he actually asked me, he said, "Do you actually even know how to file a lawsuit?" And I said, "Absolutely, I know how to file a lawsuit." And he looked at me really super angry and was shaking his fist. He was shaking. He said, "You would, wouldn't you?" And I said, "Absolutely, I'm planning on doing this." So he said, "Inmate, what do you want?" And I said, "Oh, what do I want?" And I realized he was trying to bargain with me now. So I said, "I want my custody dropped to community custody, and I want to be sent to a work release or a work camp in California." And he said, "Okay, that's what you want?" He said, "I'll get you off the compound, headed to that work camp within 2 days. Keep your mouth shut. Don't talk about this to anybody, and I'll have you out of here within 2 days. Just, don't say a word about this." And so, sure enough, 2 days later, I was actually headed to the California work camp. And consequently, I've still got a copy of that email, by the way, the email that I actually sent them. Well, first they sent me to Oklahoma City, and I saw a lot of really human degradation going on there. It was just really just horrible. But I was too scared to do anything there. And I was too scared to actually write any grievances or anything. And then I felt really guilty as I was leaving Oklahoma. And I said, "God, if you send me back there one more time, I'll document everything going on here in Oklahoma." So I made God that promise. And then they shipped me to Victorville. I was in Victorville for a couple weeks, probably maybe a week. And then they shipped me to Lompoc. And I got to Lompoc, and I was watching the officers abuse the inmates. I was watching the officers just threatening the inmates every day. "I'm going to send you to the high. I'm going to send you to the high." The officers were working inmates against each other. The inmates were getting set up. I watched this one guy. They had this guy there. His name was Shark. He was in charge of the whole compound. That was his nickname. He was a Puerto Rican guy. And he was setting people up like crazy. He actually walked in the chapel right during a church service. He grabbed a guy off the front row, the guy that actually led the singing, and he wrote him a shot for smoking. And the guy had never smoked a cigarette before in his life. He's sitting in church. He wasn't smoking. And so I'm watching all these inmates get set up. And a couple days later...
Can you explain what you mean when you say that somebody got a shot?
Okay, a shot is a disciplinary infraction. Basically, what happens when you get a shot is they add time to your sentence. They take off the good time that you've earned, so you actually have to stay in prison longer. And it can also raise your custody. It can ship you to a more dangerous prison. So you'll basically lose your work camp privileges. You will lose your ability to see your family. You'll lose your ability to buy commissary. You will lose your telephone. You'll lose basically everything. It's, you know, it's really bad to get a shot. And they'll also throw you in solitary housing.
We are talking tonight with Wesley Todd. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Community Radio. Go ahead, Todd, with your story.
Okay. So the guy Shark actually came into our dorm, and he actually had a town hall, they call it, where he talks to everybody, and everybody stands by their bunk while he talks. And he came in, and he said somebody was actually making a mess in the bathroom. And he said normally he doesn't endorse violence, but in this case, he wants us to handle his men and deal with this individual. So, you know, I immediately realized that somebody was about to have violence done on them, and somebody, you know, they could possibly even end up getting killed. And so I wrote a grievance against this guy with the nickname Shark, that basically he had attempted to call out a hit on another inmate by, you know, telling the dorm to deal with this person, even including violence. So I wrote this grievance, which everybody else is too scared to actually write grievances because they're afraid of, you know, retaliation, having drugs planted on them, things like that. And so I wrote this first grievance, and then I was actually on my work duty, my work detail, and this officer took us all he took me and about 15 or 20 other guys to a firing range, and he said he wanted us to actually clean up at the firing range. Well, I told the officer, I said, sir, there is ammunition out here at the firing range. There's, you know, possibly even arms, you know, actually firearms here. I said, we as inmates, as convicted felons, are not allowed to be on a firing range, you know, handling live ammunition. And I said, you know, we would definitely come across live ammunition if we stayed here. The officer told me, he said, look, he said, pick up all the ammunition, all the empty cartridges on the ground. He said, whenever you guys find live rounds, place them on that table. I said, you're saying for me to find the ammunition and place it on the table? He said, absolutely. So me and the crew and a lot of the guys were actually in there for crimes that like had to do with firearms. Like one guy was there for actually building machine guns, and the judge had actually specifically ordered this guy never ever handle ammunition again. The judge even told the guy was not even supposed to handle a screwdriver again. And so here, all of us convicted felons are out there finding all this ammunition. And we even found like a live bomb that the officers had built, and they were shooting at it, trying to get it to explode. So we found all this ammunition. We put it on the table for the officer, and the officer said, okay, get all that ammunition and put it in a bucket. So when I saw this, I was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me, you know? So I did it all. And then the officer he didn't search us, didn't frisk us or anything. He just sent us back to the prison without even checking us. And we actually had to drive right past the medium facility. You know, for all he knows, we could have been throwing bullets over to the medium facility. So I realized, you know, this is a really, really serious matter. And so I immediately turned it into the FBI. I also wrote a grievance about it. I knew that they were going to retaliate, and sure enough, within 3 days, they came and got me, and they threw me in solitary housing, and they had me back there for 3 days in solitary housing. They had all my property searched and inventoried and everything, and they said it was for an investigation. Well, then on the third day, when they weren't able to keep me any longer on the investigation, they came in and they told me, they said, well, we decided to search your property again, and this time we found drugs in your property. So I asked them for another, you know, urinalysis. I had just passed one. I asked them for another one. I passed it as well. And I started what became a year and a half long process to actually take the Federal Bureau of Prisons to court for forcing inmates to handle live ammunition. So they were trying to retaliate on me. So they actually shipped me. Before I go any further in this, I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of the other things going on at Lompoc, though, that would just really disturb the public. So they had a walnut farm in Lompoc, and one of the officers decided, he actually found out walnut wood was very valuable, so he actually chopped down all the walnut trees, and he was actually selling the wood to Mercedes-Benz, and he was using inmates to chop it down. He was using the BOP equipment to actually harvest all this wood, and he actually was stealing walnut wood. Another thing I witnessed a lot was officers would order food that was meant for the inmates. And I saw this at almost every institution I was at. What they would do is they would back up their trucks to the warehouses and they would steal the food, pallets of food, and then they would turn around and sell it to restaurants for 10 cents on the dollar. I saw constantly they would order recreational equipment for us inmates or TVs for us inmates. Then the officers would steal them and they would sell them on Craigslist or wherever they were selling them. It was just constant, just theft. And just, you know, I've never seen so much out of control theft in my life. So I'll fast forward a little bit. They tried to basically retaliate on me and they started shipping me all over the United States of America. I ended up at a prison called Yazoo, and it's actually in Yazoo, Mississippi. In Yazoo, I have never seen such absolute corruption in my life. They had open sewage pouring through all the dorms. Actually, and this had been going on for over 10 years. Like, we were wading through sewage, like in our cells and everything in the dorms. They had black mold in all the ceilings. There was rats. There was huge holes in the walls. There was, it was just the most despicable living conditions you could ever imagine. They had actually welded all the windows shut to where, you know, the ventilation system didn't even work correctly, even though, you know, it was already so full of black mold, you probably wouldn't want that AC, you know? So I was actually there during the COVID crisis. And when they first found out that, you know, COVID was actually hitting the institutions, they were about to put us on lockdown. They found out that our dorm actually had COVID-19. And so what they did was they transferred a whole bunch more guys from other dorms into our dorm. And in my particular cell, there was 8 other individuals, and they quarantined everybody in this dorm altogether. And so we basically went without fresh air for almost a year, just eating, you know, like basically bag lunches. They were just basically, they were lying to the courts and everything. And they were saying that there was very, very few cases on the compound, where basically everybody on the entire complex had COVID-19, but they didn't want the courts and things to find out. So people would file compassionate release motions, you know, to actually get out. And the judge would ask the prison, like, how much people on the compound have COVID. And the compound would say they only had 5 cases or 25 cases. And so basically the judge used that as a determination not to make releases that were very critical during that time. But that is, the black mold is a serious issue. The open sewage is a serious issue within the Federal Bureau of Prisons. You know, I would say a lot of these prisons should actually be closed just due to these serious, serious health concerns. You know, a guy shouldn't be housed in these despicable conditions, you know?
Thank you so much for sharing that, Wesley. So if you could just tell us, you know, how did your story end? You're out on the outside now and you're free. How does it feel to be back out? And how did your story of, you know, the end of your incarceration go?
Well, I'll tell you, I actually became the biggest whistleblower in the federal system through the course of my, you know, travels. And I actually filed a bunch of lawsuits on the Federal Bureau of Prisons. I became like the most hated inmate within the entire BOP as far as the staff goes, because I kept, you know, taking them to federal court. They were trying to retaliate on me, so they didn't want to send me to halfway house or anything like that. And I basically had to involve the U.S. Senate and the U.S. Congress into everything just to actually get to the actually halfway house. As soon as I got to the halfway house in West Palm Beach, which was actually managed by the Salvation Army, luckily it wasn't managed by the Federal Bureau of Prisons, I actually called the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee and I gave testimony 4 or 5 times regarding the corruption going on within the Federal Bureau of Prisons, and that was very profitable. They actually signed me up as a federal whistleblower and actually gave me protection against the Bureau of Prisons. The BOP tried to retaliate further. They tried to actually keep me out of home confinement, things like that. But every time the Senate was able to actually aid me and were able to, you know, cut through the red tape and just get me past that system. So what I've done now is I've actually I've started lobbying for other people. I've started FloridaPrisonConsulting.com, and I started lobbying for other people that are having problems within the Federal Bureau of Prisons. People like Joe Exotic, Tiger King, bankers, lawyers, just because I know the system so well. And so when they're running into serious problems within the Bureau of Prisons, I'm able to, you know, counteract the problems and contact Congress and contact Senate and sort these problems out and just end, you know, end the abuse in a small way, at least.
Great. And how's your personal life going?
Oh, it's going great. I'm actually engaged to be married now. And I've got two businesses in total, the Florida Prison Consulting, as well as the construction business. And I got a great church I go to that's super supportive of me. And it's great to be on the outside now.
That's great. So what are some of the things in the last 5 minutes we could talk about to change the system? You mentioned the mold is really a bad problem. The sewage is a really bad problem. What can we do to change the system to make it better for adults in custody?
Well, the first thing we need to do is we need to get rid of the ACA, which that's the American Correctional Association. That basically it's this really, really corrupt organization that certifies the prisons as safe and sanitary when they absolutely aren't. The Senate needs to actually elect another auditing board that can actually go audit these prisons and close these prisons down. The second and probably most important item of all needs to be a revamping of the grievance procedure. And basically, they need to change the Prison Litigation Reform Act of 1992. The Prison Litigation Reform Act of 1992 was signed into law by President Clinton, and it was to basically stop lawsuits from prisoners being able to sue the Federal Bureau of Prisons. And so they've essentially completely eliminated a prisoner's due process rights, which is a Fourth Amendment violation. So they need to really revamp the actual grievance procedure where inmates are able to complain and where, you know, when these complaints come up, where the general public can actually find out what's truly going on inside these prisons. As right now, there's zero accountability with the Federal Bureau of Prisons. You know, they're getting away with murder. The officers are all smuggling drugs. The officers are all smuggling in cell phones. It's just turned into this huge smuggling ring, you know, this giant cartel of federal officers. And if they could actually revamp the grievance procedure where it would be, you know, user-friendly, where the inmates weren't scared to death of retaliation to be able to use the grievance procedure, as well as have a third-party auditing system that was actually not part of the cartel, you know, that is the biggest thing I think that would change in the Federal Bureau of Prisons almost immediately. The other thing is the crime has been so rampant for so many years with these federal officers. Every single officer, and I'm even talking the chaplains, everybody needs to be removed from their positions, because if they haven't been committing the crimes themselves, the abuse of the inmates, you know, I saw one inmate actually chained to the floor for, like, I think he was chained to the floor for about a month, and he was chained to the floor because he was a homosexual. You know, that's the officers were punishing him while he was back in the SHU in solitary housing. So they've been getting away with murder for so many years. You know, you can't take these criminals that are running the BOP now and just change the system and keep these same criminals in. You know, I think it would be even good if people that have previously had a criminal background could actually work at the Federal Bureau of Prisons, you know, because we understand the system. We understand, you know, the agony and the turmoil. You know, the BOP says they have a hiring problem. They have a problem with staff. And there's one reason why they have a problem with staff that nobody knows about. Because a lot of people actually go to the BOP and they actually care about society. They care about the justice system. They want to make a change. When they get to the BOP and they see the absolute corruption, they're so disgusted they quit their job within 2 weeks. I've seen this hundreds of cases where officers will go to the BOP to start work and actually try to help society, and they end up quitting within 2 weeks because they're so appalled at our justice system. And, you know, that is the true reason why the BOP has a lack of staff. They don't want to admit that, but, you know, any problem that happens, any inmate abuse that happens, anything that happens that goes wrong in the BOP, the first thing they say is, oh, well, it's because we're lacking staff. Well, now you know the true reason why they're actually lacking staff. It's not because nobody wants to work for the BOP. Nobody wants to work. It's because the BOP is like the world's most corrupt cartel that I've ever experienced. It's really sad.
Thank you. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, Wesley, but this has been a really great conversation. If people would like to find out more about your consulting, Where can they go to find out about your work that you do to support people, adults in custody?
Well, I've actually got a website, www.floridaprisonconsulting.com, but I'm actually doing a lot on TikTok. I just started a TikTok channel, which is Florida Prison Consulting, and I'm giving out free advice, tutorials, teaching people how to actually contact their congressman, contact their senator, how to fight for their loved one. And, you know, these tips that I'm teaching people are so valuable. They definitely need to go watch these TikToks, and that doesn't cost them anything. You know, and I add new videos every single day of basically how to fight and how to protect your loved ones, you know, because it's pretty crazy in there. You know, a lot of guys end up dead or end up with new charges that they shouldn't even be getting. But if your family knows how to protect these guys, you know, this stuff won't happen to them.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Wesley, for joining us on Prison Pipeline.
All right. Thank you so much. And God bless you.
That was Wesley Todd on Prison Pipeline. And now for the last few minutes of the show, we have commentary from Bilal Muhammad from Prison Radio.
I have been completely stripped of all American rights, my liberty, due process, and every sense of justice. They have been made non-existent by the El Paso court system. For no legitimate reason other than my race, religion, and socioeconomic standing, i.e., I am poor. So I wrote, What to the Black Man is the 4th of July, which is based on Mr. Frederick Douglass's original piece written back in 1852, which was titled, What to the Slave is the 4th of July. What have I, or those I represent, to do with the national independence? I am not included within the bounds of the so-called glorious American anniversary, according to Dred Scott, nor would I partake in its celebration, as their high independence from the British government only reveals the immeasurable distance between us. We are not yet independent from you, as the American government has become exactly what the colonies sought independence from. The oppressed has become the oppressor. Their inheritance by birthright is justice, liberty, prosperity, and independence, bequeathed by and built upon the backs of African slave capitalism and the genocide of the indigenous people by their forefathers. It is shared amongst the rich and fortified by institutional racism solely for their benefit, not by us nor for us. This 4th of July is theirs, not mine and not ours. And that's the end of that. So the spoken word of Frederick Douglass and my rendition of his piece 171 years later are both examples of the authentic voice of Black alienation. Such protests have been our hue and cry against America all throughout its history, past to the present. And how could it be anything otherwise? How can Black and other oppressed peoples truly believe we are Americans as long as our oppression and mass incarceration drives large portions of the nation's economy, laws, and politics by depriving us of our God-given rights? It is nothing more than modern-day slavery under the 13th Amendment. Or are we just too blind to see the facts? American capitalism, as in all capitalism, is based on exploitation, else it can never turn a profit. So there must always be a class to exploit in order for capitalism to exist. So I ask you to ask yourself then, historically, who has been this exploited class in America? And the answer to that is people of color, and people no matter their color, as long as they're poor. So this 4th of July week, I call your attention to the 10-point program of the Black Panther Party, and ask that it be resurrected and enforced throughout the nation. Only then will we have true independence and true freedom. Power to the people. Muhammad Ali.
These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is conducting a survey. Help us shape the types of news, public affairs, and music programming KBOO broadcasts in the future. Tell us how you listen to KBOO, and we'll use this feedback to help serve you better. The survey is anonymous. However, you will have an opportunity to provide your contact information to enter a drawing. 10 lucky winners will receive a $50 gift card. Complete the community survey before Sunday, July 16th. Go to our website at kboo.fm/survey23. That's kboo.fm/survey23. Thank you in advance for your time and your feedback. Stay tuned for KBOO's next strategic plan coming soon.